This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's now time for Connecting Caregivers with author, speaker, caregiver advocate, and talk show host, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for caregivers.
Caregivers around the world today, it's time to lift you up. It's time to celebrate. Good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers with love, laughter, and lessons learned. Unfortunately, my co-host and sidekick, Lynn Thornley, is not here today. She has a little dental stuff she has to deal with. Yeah. So, Lynn, I hope the dental gods are on your side. And we have on the boards, as always, Ed. What's happening,
yeah,
Ed?
Always. I was off last week.
One week, yeah.
One day off. Yeah.
But I like it when you're here because I'm used to you.
There you go.
A little gray out there today.
Me or?
No. Oh. No, the weather.
I'm going to say, I've noticed it over a couple of years, yeah.
Well, I had a family Zoom this morning, and I have a sister in Pennsylvania and a sister in Maine. I don't even want to think about what it's like there. My sister's like, there are 20-inch icicles hanging off my house, and they have to, like, get the snow off the roof, or the roof will...
You know, we have the Canada calling at 9 and noon every day, and Prior Smith, who does the Canada calling, usually gives a little weather update.
Yeah.
And every time he comes up with, so far this year, it's been a very slow year as far as snow goes and unseasonably warm. Like 2 days later, it's, we got blasted yesterday.
2 feet of snow.
8 feet of snow, yeah. And it's below 32 degrees.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, I know. You know, when they say that, it makes my nose run. I feel like I'm so cold.
Somebody asked me, what's the coldest weather you've ever been in? And I would have to say probably about 20.
Yeah, me too. I remember when I was in high school, we went on our senior trip to Lake Placid.
Yeah.
All skiing and all that stuff. And the hair in my nose froze.
Yeah.
And I was like...
You gotta trim that once in a while,
I just went in the lodge and stayed by the fireplace for the rest of the time.
You gotta be streamlined and have no hair in your nose.
No good.
But the worst part is the wind chill.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be 40 degrees. You get the wind chill, it feels
right.
Like 10.
Yeah.
And I've been skiing and it can go either way. You can be skiing and you got to take clothes off because it's hot.
Right.
Or you just say, forget it. It's just too cold.
Or like all those people right now, they're just in their houses freaking freezing.
What do you do?
I don't know.
I guess you got a little practice from the pandemic, what to do sitting in your house.
Well, I think when you live in places like that, they expect that. They're like,
Absolutely.
Of them just like to nest for a little while.
And some of them cry if they don't get the snow.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, it's snowing. It looks so beautiful out.
Yeah, for a minute.
The prettiest thing I've ever seen is, you ever seen a full moon at night and snow on the ground?
It is. Yeah.
Incredible. It's so bright out.
Right.
I mean, it's like, 5 o'clock in the afternoon almost.
Yeah. It's fabulous.
Really nice.
It's fabulous. But, alrighty. So, first thing I want to do is give a shout out to our newest listeners. We have Sandra in Chicago. Wonder what the weather's like there now. We have Roslyn in Pinellas Park and Jeannie in St. Pete. And like I say, there's always plenty of room around the Connecting Caregivers table for more listeners. Whether you listen to us live right now on AM/FM, or on the computer, or on Facebook, or YouTube, wherever you listen to us, we're just here to bring help and hope to caregivers, to bring interesting people that will tell you about great resources and tips for caregivers, and just so you caregivers know that you're not on this journey alone. You're definitely not on this journey alone. And that's why we need to talk about this stuff. So my first guest today is Deb Hallisey. Deb, are you on the line?
I am. It's so good to hear your voice.
Yes, it's so good to hear you too. So Deb and I met a while ago, and I love everything she does because I love anybody that advocates for caregivers. And she's got a lot of knowledge and a lot of stuff and a new book, but I'm going to let you tell your story because you worked in corporate for a lot of years. I worked in corporate years ago, too. And you're like, oh, I have this powerful job and all this stuff. And then overnight, your life changes. Or maybe in a couple of weeks, or maybe in 6 months. But all of a sudden, everything changes.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Introduce yourself, and let's go on.
Sure. Thank you for the chance. So my name is Deb Hallisey, and I am sorry to tell you, I have to now say I am a past caregiver. Lost my mom at the end of November, but the blessing is she died very unexpectedly, but quickly and peacefully in her sleep, and I am so grateful for that.
Yeah.
And that really caps off 8 years as a caregiver. It started with my dad, who was diagnosed with congestive heart failure in 2014. And through that whole year, I didn't identify as a caregiver, but I was going to doctor's appointments with him.
Right.
I was helping to do the grocery shopping. I was helping him with my mom because he was her caregiver.
Making sure they get the medications, the whole deal.
100%. The prescription rugs, rooms when we needed it, whatever they needed. And I lived an hour away.
Wow.
So
it's a challenge.
It was a challenge. It was a challenge. And we lost him in February of 2015. And I, you know, I spent, as you did, a lot of years in corporate. I worked for Ernst & Young, Huron Consulting Group, some boutique consulting firms. And the company I was working for at the time gave me 3 months to be at home with my mom to get her settled, working on internal projects.
Okay.
And at the end of the year, when they didn't make their numbers as a consultant because I had not made mine,
yeah,
they let me go. And it was devastating and the best thing that ever happened to me.
You know, when I lost my job with corporate, it was a different story, but this was my feeling. I was released.
Yes.
I was released to go do what I wanted to do.
Well, and you know, Linda, I traveled all the time. I would leave on a Monday and come back on a Thursday.
Wow.
To the point where when I first lost my job, the first 3 months, the first thought out of my head every morning was, what side of the bed do I have to get up out of?
Yeah.
Because in a hotel, you're in a different bed.
Yeah. Sometimes you wake up and you go, where am I?
Yes. So it was a relief. I'm with you 100%. And my mom is the one who got me started in this wonderful field of elder care and working with family, adult children of aging parents, because she said to me, you have learned so much.
Mm-hmm.
You need to share it with people.
Yeah.
What a gift.
Yeah. And we do need to share it to people. You know, recently I was in my mail room where I live. And a woman opened up her mailbox, and it was stuffed with mail, and the mail fell out on the floor. And she started crying. And I'm thinking, it's just mail, you know? And I pick it up, and she says, I'm taking care of my husband with dementia. It's just so hard. And another lady in the mail room, which I didn't know also, said, me too. And I was like, you know what? You girls need to be friends, and you need to know me. Because we need to talk about this. We can't keep it hidden, you know. And now I see them in the complex, the two of them and their husbands walking around.
Oh, that's wonderful. See, sometimes the hand of fate or God or whatever you want to call it intervenes, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. So I started off as a blogger. I started my website, Advocate for Mom and Dad, where I write for adult children of aging parents. And my mother, God love her, allowed me to talk about her and write about her.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
It really is, because there's a lot of learnings.
Yeah.
A lot of learnings, and to be able to share it. And people started coming to me, and that's when I decided to become a certified caregiving consultant. And then the next step of the journey was I had the opportunity to present at a national conference, and when I figured out the title, I went, oh, there's my book.
Yeah.
And so I wrote a book called Your Caregiver Relationship Contract. It's available in English and Spanish. And I will just say the premise of this book is caregiving changes every relationship in your life, not just with the person you're caring for.
Exactly.
100% it changes it. And you hear so much about, oh, you have to set boundaries, you have to ask for help, you need a support system, which is true.
Yeah.
Which is 100% true. But what's hard about setting boundaries is you don't realize that most boundaries are really come from unspoken expectations.
Well, I have to tell you, this is hysterical, because this morning at my support group, my Zoom support group, we talked about setting boundaries. And not just with the person we're caring for, but with all those other family members that are around.
100%. And work and spouse.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody. Everybody. And it's those unspoken expectations that if we don't, like, realize them. Like, I remember listening to one of your radio shows, you said, nobody's a mind reader. And that's 100% right. If you have a need or somebody, I'll give you the perfect example. When my dad went in the hospital, my mom's expectation was I could continue to care for her the way my dad did. And they had this routine with, like, six things that had to happen before she could go to bed. And I had the same expectation she did that I needed to do the same way because I didn't know any better.
Right.
And every night I was exhausted because I was living with her while Dad was in the hospital, going to the hospital, trying to work, care for her, and I thought my head was explode. And I said to her, Mommy, we have to change something. Can I take the toothbrush that's the toothpaste that's in the bathroom and just leave it in the kitchen so you can get it and brush your teeth while I'm in your bedroom? And, you know, the initial was no, but we negotiated where. And that was the first time I had ever asked her to change anything about the relationship, the contract she had had with my dad.
Yeah.
And it was a breakthrough.
It is a big breakthrough. But we have to have those conversations.
Yes. And they're hard.
Yeah.
They're hard. But, you know, I'm very practical. And so when I talk about setting boundaries, I'm talking about this needs to be really an intentional conversation that you've thought about, that you don't do in the heat of the moment, that you use the appropriate I language, you pick the time, the place, you understand what motivates them. And then you don't get angry if it doesn't work the first time, because I call it the drip method.
Exactly, because it's like making a plan, but your plan is not going to be overnight.
No.
So tell me the drip method. I like that.
So the drip method is basically having a conversation, the same one. When you're trying to get somebody from a no to a yes. No, I don't want anybody in the house to help. No, I don't want you to tell anybody what's going on in the family. No, I don't want you to take over the finances. Whatever that no is, you have to have multiple conversations, multiple times, using what I just said, the I statement, picking your time and place, what is going to motivate them.
Right.
A quick funny story was getting my mother to say yes to Alexa.
Okay.
Right? So my dad, they had a phone that had like 62-digit phone numbers, and since Mom was blind, that's how she dialed people.
Okay.
And the ability to change those phone numbers died with my father.
Oh,
and as people started using cell phones, she couldn't dial, was getting so frustrated, and every time I was with her, I would hear, I can't use my phone. And I heard, you're a bad caregiver. You're a bad daughter, because you can't solve this. So my solution was, let's get you an Alexa. You can use that to call people. And full year, many conversations, many different ways. And then we get the opportunity to get a free one as part of a pilot project.
Free, yes. Free for me.
Free.
That's
well,
what Mama
says.
Well,
that's exactly it.
Yes.
That's exactly what she said when I said to her, well, it's free. She said, oh, well, then okay.
Yeah, I'll try it.
which I love. But here's the thing. After it was in there, the reason she resisted is because her full-time caregiver, when I was not with her, would hear the conversation and it wasn't private. And I'm like, oh. You're right, Mom.
Yeah.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But I wish she had told me that earlier.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I would not have felt bad. I would have not have heard you're a bad daughter. We might have found another solution.
Exactly. Especially like you wouldn't have heard I'm a bad daughter part, because we hear that in our head. And you know you're not, but you feel you are.
But in that moment.
You feel you are.
Right, because they're vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you want to solve it. And when you can't, you're like, oh, I'm such a bad caregiver. I'm such a bad daughter. I'm such a bad spouse, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we're not. We're doing the best we can.
We're human.
In really tough circumstances. Yes.
We're human. Yes. And through this whole thing, if we're going to take care of them, we have to take care of us. You know, I say to my caregivers sometimes, I say, this may not sound very nice, but if you don't take care of yourself, you're doing an injustice to your loved one.
100%.
And
because what happens is it comes out in anger and frustration.
Yeah.
And that's unpleasant for everybody.
You know, when someone walks into a support group and I'll say, welcome, you know, how come you're here? I yelled at my mother. And everybody goes, yeah, I get it. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to do that. We have enough guilt already. We don't need to yell at our mother.
Exactly. And here's the thing that, like, there was this aha moment. Grief is the one emotion we do not talk about in caregiving, and it underlies caregiving like a river the entire time.
Well, you know, and there's so much grief in caregiving. You know, I can remember saying to somebody in a support group one time, do you realize you're grieving? And she's like, my husband's still alive. Yes, but you're grieving. You're grieving the loss of the retirement you thought you were going to have, the freedom you thought you were going to have, the health you were going to have. It's heavy grief.
100%. And it's, you know, it can be ambiguous, it can be anticipatory, it can be real because, you know, they're in the hospital and you're seeing them. But here's the thing, if we don't talk about grief and acknowledge it throughout that entire process, it comes out in emotions that can be really destructive.
Or just get stuffed up there for later, then it's going to come back and get you.
Exactly. Yep, then all of a sudden, you know, whatever happens and you are... oh, my God, you're like, wow, I'm sick now. What's going on with me? You know, it really does manifest yourself in your body in not good ways.
Yeah.
In not good ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so interesting. I just lost my mom, and not long after that, I heard a term I'd never heard before called grief relief.
Mm-hmm.
And that's during the grief after caregiving, the relief we feel.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're done. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But then we feel guilty.
Yeah. That we should even think that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's
Go ahead. I was just going to say, for the people who have loved ones with a memory impairment, like dementia, there's that grief relief as a big part of that all along as well. And that's really hard. But
Well, you know, it's been very interesting. Crazy. So in one of my particular support groups, probably 50% of the people that attend, their loved one has passed in the last year, let's say. But they want to come back, and they get it. They get what support groups are about. So what we're doing is we're starting a mentoring program. So if, let's say, your loved one died from Parkinson's, and a new person comes in the group and their loved one has Parkinson's, well, you can kind of like buddy up and talk in between support groups, because the person that's already been through it knows about the resources, hopefully, and everything. But, and not just does it help the new person coming into the group, but it gives the ex-caregiver a sense of purpose.
I love this idea. I love this idea. This is exactly, you know, that whole sense of purpose. We don't recognize that in our elders. They don't lose that in any way, shape, or form. And we need, as assisted living facilities, bingo isn't purpose. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's an activity, but bingo's not purpose.
Right.
We need to figure out how in these communities and as family members, we can continue to help them feel it. Because that's what keeps you alive.
Yeah.
A sense of purpose.
Yeah. I had a woman that came to my support group years ago, and her mom passed away, and she came back and she said, ever since my mom died, my dad just sits in a chair. They were together for 50-something years. She said, so I don't know what to do, Linda. I took him to the doctor. The doctor gave him an antidepressant, but he still just sits in that chair. So I said, tell me something he used to do when he was younger. She said, he used to build these big model ships. And I said, could he still do that? And she said, his hands are kind of arthritic. I said, you want to try an experiment? She said, I'll try anything. I said, go to the craft store. They have these wooden cars, like 8 pieces to put together. I said, buy a dozen of them and tell Dad that I know of a nursery school that could really use these. Dad, can you paint them and put them together? Well, before he passed away, he made something like 60 dozen sets of cars and boats and was sending them to nursery schools and other schools, and kids were Skyping with him. Every morning he got up, he had his purpose. And I said to her, that must have got a little expensive, buying all those supplies and shipping everything. She said, you know what, Linda? It was cheaper than that antidepressant.
100%. Oh, my gosh. I love that story. I love that story. Yeah. You know, what did they, what we forget as we grow older, and this is so much a part of self-care, what did you love to do as a child?
Yeah.
Like, find that again. Go back to that. You can sing with Swing on a Swing at 65. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, what was your profession? So there was a woman that worked in an office. So her daughter got a file cabinet, and she gives her all this stuff to file. And who cares if she files it right? And then when her, when she goes to bed, she takes all the files out, and the next morning it's waiting for her job.
That's beautiful. That's just beautiful. It really, really is.
Yeah, we just got to think about it and figure out. So, Deb, where can our listeners reach you? Where can they find your book?
They can find my book on Amazon. It's called Your Caregiver Relationship Contract. And let me say my name. It's Deborah Hallisey, and you can search by my name as well. The first book is actually in English and Spanish. The book that was just published is a retooling of the first book, particularly for dementia caregivers.
Okay.
You know, people said to me, how do I set a boundary with somebody with dementia? And I'm like, well, in the middle to late stage, you don't.
Right.
But in the early to mild,
you can.
You need to be setting, you can, and you need to be doing those, particularly around how do you want to live your life.
Yeah.
And then you better be setting them with the people in your family, because the one person who walks in the door and says, but Mom, no, you got married in 1950,
yeah,
and agitates your loved one, you need to set that boundary and say, look, you can't come visit me.
Right.
You can't be saying that. You can't be saying that, but here, I need help with this.
Right.
You're better off not letting them in the door and letting them do something else for you.
Exactly. So I'm very excited to say that Deb is going to be part of our next caregiver conference in May. I'm so excited.
I am too.
And you'll be hearing a lot more good things from her, and I'm sure she'll be another guest on the show again because she's just got so much to share. So thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you, and all the information you gave me, I'll put in the description of the show so everybody can find you and your book.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
I love your support groups.
Thanks.
I love your support groups. I wish I was in Florida. Oh, but you're doing over Zoom.
Yes, maybe you'll have to come to one. I do a journaling workshop every month. We need to chat. On Zoom.
Yes. Is it on your website, how to find them?
Go on my website under events.
I will.
All right, my friend. Have a delicious day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
And now it's time to hear from our wonderful sponsors, because you know the deal. If you don't hear from them, you don't hear from me. So don't go away. We'll be right back on Connecting Caregivers Radio.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you looking for compassionate and dependable home care for you or a loved one? Assisting Hands Home Care, serving Pinellas and Pasco counties, can help.
The day came that taking care of my mother was no longer the best thing for me or for her. Between kids and a job, I couldn't give her the attention she needed and deserved, and I was overwhelmed. So I reached out to Assisting Hands Home Care. Now I can see what an important decision that was, and I feel confident that my mother has compassionate and dependable caregivers who help her to stay happy, healthy, and home. Today, I'm able to visit with my mother and enjoy our time together, which is exactly what we both needed.
Assisting Hands Home Care. Call today for your free in-home consultation. In Pinellas, call 727-748-4211 or visit assistinghands.com. When you can't do it all, give Assisting Hands a call.
Arden Courts is not just a place to live. It's a place to call home. Residential living combined with quality caregiving. This is the philosophy behind Arden Courts. Communities created exclusively for individuals with Alzheimer's disease and related dementia who would benefit from a safe and structured environment. For additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides, call 888-478-2410 to locate a community nearest you. Inquire about our educational seminars, resource library, or support groups, or simply feel free to ask questions you may have about Alzheimer's and related dementias. At Arden Courts, we know, we understand, and we can help, because memory care is all we do. Remember, call 888-478-2410 for additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides.
Sean W. Scott has been practicing elder law and qualifying clients for Medicaid for over 30 years. While his practice is in all areas of estate planning, such as durable power of attorney, healthcare surrogates, and wills, he also prides himself on having a 100% accuracy rate on getting clients approved for Medicaid. Why Medicaid, you may ask? Do you want to pay up to $16,000 a month for a nursing home should the time come? Obviously, no one wants to have to endure this cost. So, even though you may have planned well for retirement, the reality is, things happen. Planning ahead is never too soon. You need to make sure your income and assets are protected so that you can take care of you and your loved ones. Florida law is very specific on how and what is protected and how to protect it. Give Sean a call. He can help. 727-539-0181. That's 727-539-0181.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Central.
And we're back. And I'm jumping around here because I have my puppy Charlie on my lap.
And he is a ball of energy.
Yes, he is a ball. And that voice you hear is my friend Sean Scott. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, welcome. Thanks.
Sean is an elder care attorney here in Largo. And he's on the show every month to ask questions. So if you want to have any questions, you can call in at 727-441-3000. But I have a couple of questions for you, Sean.
And if you hear anything in the background, that's the little puppy, Charlie, who's about 2 weeks old, it looks like.
No, 3 months.
But anyway. He's a ball of energy. Really cute. Very cute.
Yes. He's a good boy. So my first question is, and this is somebody just asked in the support group this morning.
What's that?
She said, I was the power of attorney for my sister.
Right.
She said, and then my sister's husband got mad at me. And he told me he was going to take me off all the documents and I wasn't going to be power attorney or anything anymore.
He was going to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
She never heard anything further. So she wants to know, am I still power of attorney? Is there somewhere I can check that to see if I'm still power of attorney, or was he just saying that?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, it would be hard for him to take her off as his wife's power of attorney.
Okay.
He doesn't have the ability to just come on and say, you're not power of attorney anymore. That doesn't work that way.
What if his wife's not capable of making her own decisions?
That's where things get a little interesting.
That's what I think
is the situation is that if she's power of attorney for her sister, the only person that can change that is, there's two people actually. The court can change that.
Right.
So if a guardianship is instituted, that's a very technical answer, but if a guardianship is instituted, then her role as power of attorney would stop. The other way that she can be removed or changed is if her sister changes her power of attorney document.
Not the spouse?
No, not the spouse at all. Not in the loop, not at all, zero, no way.
So that's really good to know.
The spouse can't come in and say, you're not my wife's power attorney
like
anymore. I don't like you. No, absolutely not. Cannot happen. Again, the only two ways is if his wife or her sister changes the document or if a guardianship is instituted.
So her sister would have to go to an attorney and say, I want to change my power of attorney.
Okay. And in that situation, obviously, she has to have capacity in order to do that. And so if she's lost that ability, she can't change her power of attorney then.
Right.
So, interesting.
Well, seems like we have a caller. Hello.
Call Tricia.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
It's Trisha.
Hi, Linda. It's Tricia.
Hi, how are you?
It's Tricia.
I'm good.
Tricia goes to one way, said Paul Cruz.
Hi, Tricia.
Hi. I have a question for you.
I have answers. What's up?
Okay. Two questions. When it comes to assets, if you sold property in less than 5 years ago, I'm being told that we denied the Medicaid to switch over from ALF to a skilled nursing because the property, which was sold, and the mortgage company was paid off, and we got $5.
Okay.
But they're turning us down and saying we're denied because I think they're using the price of the property that sold, not what we got. Is that correct?
Well, let's kind of state what is correct.
Okay.
You can sell your stuff within the last 5 years. That's not a problem. Okay, so if you sold a car or you sold a piece of rental property or something else or you sold your home, all of those things by themselves doesn't hurt you. But what does hurt you is if you've sold something that now gets converted into cash, for example. So let's take a very specific example. Let's say you have a home. Your home is not counted as an asset when determining your eligibility for Medicaid benefits, but you sell the home and you convert the home from a non-countable asset into cash, which is counted, and that could disqualify you if you have too much cash then.
Okay.
So that's
but what if you don't?
But I mean, if you're exactly my point, if you're still under the amount of money that you're allowed to have, then it's okay. Let me give you again some real specific examples with specific numbers. So we're dealing with a husband and wife, a married situation. This is the facts I'm setting up. They're allowed to have around $150,000 in assets and still be eligible for Medicaid benefits. And they own a house, and that house is worth $100,000. Well, if they only have $20,000 in the bank, and then they sell their house for $100,000, they now have $120,000 in the bank. They're allowed to have $150,000. They're under. The sale of that house didn't hurt them. But if it was a $200,000 house, now that would push them over that magic number and would hurt them, because now they have too much money to qualify. So that's not what you told me, though. You said you just sold it, they paid off the mortgage, and you got $5. So I'm pretty sure.
Should they be able to deny us because of that, saying that we're over?
No, there's that makes zero sense. There's got to be something lost in translation here, because that just would not happen.
Because her husband is in a memory care community now and moving into nursing.
Gotcha. So the idea is that, and let's just start from the beginning, in order for him to qualify for skilled care in the nursing environment, he's married. The married couple can have $150,000 in assets, not counting their house, not counting their car. His income, at least initially, has to be below $2,742 of gross income per month. If he's under that, he's okay. We're not counting the wife's income in that, by the way, just his income. So now you should be able to apply and be approved. If you gave away assets in the last 5 years, that would hurt you. But I didn't hear anybody giving anything away. They sold something and they didn't get much profit out of it. That doesn't hurt you at all. So
if a facility, the other thing I wanted to ask is, if he's in a memory care and the doctor has told that, yes, he needs to be in skilled nursing. Okay. But I've been told that they have to go into rehab first for them to change it from ALF over to ICP and then go from rehab into skilled nursing.
Boy, am I glad you called today.
What if he's not? I mean, do I have to make him fall down and hurt himself to go into rehab?
No, you do not. You do not. So the whole thing, and this happens a lot with a lot of my clients, is that, you know, they're out in the community, they're talking to their friends, or maybe somebody else, you know, the doctor or their other lawyer who's not an elder law attorney, and you get bits and pieces of this, and they push it together, and they oftentimes end up with the wrong answer. So let's talk about the right answer. So in order to go into a nursing home and have Medicaid pay for the cost of that care, you do not have to go through the hospital. You do not have to be and be rehabilitating. Or that is a way you can go into the nursing home, and that does happen a lot. But for a lot of my clients that are dealing with dementia, a lot of times when they have to come to that placement decision and they're going to place, because that will come eventually, well, you know, they're not going through the hospital because the guy has Alzheimer's. He doesn't need to go to the hospital, but he needs to be in the nursing home. So you direct place from home to the nursing home at that point. And as part of that process, you're usually working with somebody like me to make sure that all your ducks are in a row and all of everything's ready to rock and roll, so that when we go in as a Medicaid patient with Medicaid paying the bill. Or if we're not quite there yet, we've at least gotten ready and we're ready to apply for that first month while you're there. So there's some coordination with me in that situation.
Yeah. Well, my husband is on Medicaid, you know, with one of the Florida Simply Healthcare is the one. And so he's already getting help to pay where he's at the memory care facility. But I'm told now that it's not the right kind of Medicaid for him to go into nursing.
And that is correct.
Nursing.
Okay. So let's have that little brief discussion, is that there are two different flavors of Medicaid that are relevant in most of my clients' lives. There's Medicaid that pays for home and assisted living care, and then there's Medicaid that pays for nursing home care. So I call it ALF Medicaid and nursing home Medicaid. And they're kind of different flavors, and they pay differently. There's different things that you have to do to get on the program. But when you go from the assisted living facility to the nursing home, if you're already on Medicaid, the mm-hmm. nursing home should be able, and kind of in the background, switch it from the ALF to the nursing home Medicaid without any problem.
So it's the place that you're trying to get them into a place. They're the ones that change it.
Yeah, because they're the one that's going to be paid. Right. So, right. And this is a discussion you should have, you know, with the admissions people in that facility and say, hey, listen, you know, we're currently in an assisted living facility. We're already on Medicaid. Just want to make sure that we can transition over with Medicaid with you guys. And they should be able to take care of that.
I understand that. I was dealing with a nursing home that pretty much told me that, no, you're denied because of that property that was sold in 2018. Where we got $5 after the mortgage was paid off.
You told me you're receiving benefits now, though, aren't you? Didn't you say that? You are receiving benefits. So you're on Medicaid right now. How you're not denied.
They won't let him go in there. They're denying him and say they don't take anybody on Medicaid unless they've been in the rehab and switch over to, you know, nursing. So that's wrong information. I should just look somewhere else.
Or let's have this conversation
with me
in my office, and we'll drill down and get a game plan exactly what we should do in your situation. But you bring up some interesting points, so for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Thank
questions.
You very much.
Great.
And I will.
I'll text his number to you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, my friend. So I hear somebody else on the line.
Caller Stephanie.
Stephanie.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hi. Hi, Linda and Sean. How are you today?
Excellent.
Good.
Good, good. I'll try to make this short. I don't know if I can. My first question is, does Medicare or Medicaid pay for home health care?
Yes.
Which one?
Both.
Both.
Okay. Let me explain a little bit there, though. So, because home health care, that's kind of a broad, sweeping, you know, kind of description of a type of care. Medicare can pay for home health care if it's necessary for, like, a, you know, rehabilitation setting, or, you know, you're post-surgery or post-discharge from the hospital and you need some care at home and it's getting you better. So home health care can be paid in that setting by Medicare. In a different setting where we're not looking at that rehabilitative kind of thing, but more of an ongoing care being provided for the person, Medicare won't do that, but Medicaid might, okay? So Medicaid can be a way of paying for that care. On the assisted living side, Medicare typically does not pay on the assisted living side, but Medicaid in many cases can help pay the cost of that care.
Okay. So I have a scenario where there's somebody who is younger than retirement age.
Right.
They're getting Medicare because of their disability.
Okay.
As far as I know, they don't have any Medicaid or anything at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And they need some help in the home, perhaps with a shower, perhaps with some food preparation, perhaps. You know, just somebody to be there at night in case they have to get up to go to the bathroom or something. So if they're trying to get this kind of help, that doesn't seem to fall into the Medicare scenario that
you were
talking
about. That would not be a Medicare play there. It could possibly be Medicaid. And there's also another program called PACE that we work with that can be helpful in a home setting, especially the things that you were talking about. The one thing that does maybe push us outside of the home care world is that somebody to be there at night. Excuse me, but that's not likely to be happen. And if you are in that situation, you might need to transition to assisted living instead of a home care setting.
Right. So if, let's say they needed to get to the point where they need to get Medicaid as well.
Right.
Do they look at both spouses' income?
Okay, they do not look at both spouses' income. When we're looking at Medicaid eligibility for somebody, the rule's pretty clear. They look at the income of the person applying, the one that's going to be receiving the benefits, And then if it's a spousal situation, they look at the assets of both husband and wife. So it's a little bit of a, you know, income only for the applicant, but assets for husband and wife. So it doesn't, it's not the same. It's different based upon whether we're talking about income and assets.
Okay. I mean, I personally think they're over income.
Excuse me. Yeah, well, let's talk about that.
I think they're over because of the assets.
Well, so if you have income greater than, again, the applicant has income greater than that $2,742 magic income cap number, if you're above that number, there's a solution to fix that problem. You're not out of luck. You're not disqualified forever for Medicaid. You just have to take an additional step and use a strategy or a technique or a tool called a qualified income trust. And that's something that I would put in place, show you how to utilize. We could then effectively reduce the income and trigger eligibility. Do it all the time, multiple times a week.
Okay.
And likewise, if they're over assets, the same issue, we have the same kind of problem
process
there. Yeah, is that if the client has more than that magic asset limit or cap, then what we do is we come in and we look at how the assets are situated, their characteristics, how much they are, and then make recommendations and guide the client through the process of fixing those problems so that we can qualify for Medicaid benefits. So just because you're over income or just because you have too much assets to qualify right this second doesn't mean that you can't become eligible for Medicaid with a little of our assistance.
Okay.
I know, wild, huh?
So. I don't know how you do this for a living.
It's an interesting.
I got, he's been doing it for 32 years. He eats
30,
and sleeps it.
33 now. 33, yeah, I've gotten a birthday now. Here's a funny thing. A lot of times, what I have happen is I'll be explaining this to a client, and you know they're kind of get a little slack jawed, as in like, you can do what? And then the next question, and I go, I get this a lot, is this legal?
And I'm an attorney you're talking to.
Well, you know, which kind of, and I always like to say, I'm an elder law attorney, not a criminal attorney. So.
Oh, my goodness.
And yes, it is legal, just in case you're wondering. 100% legal. That's why you have me, is to make sure that we tread this path.
That we
path
are legal.
And that we are legal, and we do things by the book, and everything is up and up and out in the open and disclosed. And ultimately, though, we're going to qualify you for those benefits, and we're going to protect your life savings. We do that every day.
But this is not just for somebody who has to go into a nursing home.
No, home and assisted living options are available, too. Yep, that's a good point.
Okay, because in a scenario I'm familiar with, the one spouse is saying that all the husband's assets need to be signed over to her before she can get help for him.
Okay, not exactly a true statement, but like a lot of these things, there's some kernel in there that has some validity. So here again is what the rules actually say. In a husband and wife scenario, when you're applying for Medicaid benefits, they, him and her, can have up to $150,000 in assets. Within 90 days of approval, Medicaid wants to have the assets positioned into the wife or the non-applying spouse's name, and the Medicaid recipient spouse, person getting benefits, has to have $2,000 or less in their account. So there's kind of some truth to that, but not truth in that you have to have them all in the spouse's name before you apply. That is not, that's not what the rules say.
Hmm.
And again, this is kind of why I exist, is because
these are difficult questions.
These are good questions, and they're not unsolvable questions, but my clients, they come in, we talk about their situation, we look at timing, we look at placement, and then we go, okay, let's fix these problems, and we'll be eligible March 1st for Medicaid to pay the cost of care in your nursing home.
So this isn't something that has to be done years in advance.
It's not.
It could be done Yes. In a short span of time.
Yes, it can be done in a short span of time. And this is a really good question that you almost asked. So let me ask it for you. When should you take action to fix this problem? I mean, when should you do that? And that's a quality question. So here's my quality answer. Obviously, if you're facing nursing home care right this second, I mean, we've had a stroke, you're in the nursing home for some reason, whatever, the time is now. That's obvious. But what happens if you're dealing with a more progressive degenerative disease process? And that classic one there is Alzheimer's. Okay, you just got a diagnosis from your neurologist that you have Alzheimer's. Now, kind of the semi-joke statement here is that, well, on your way home from the doctor, you should probably stop at our office.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because things are now changing in your world dramatically, okay? And that disease process is going to affect almost everything from, your estate planning, your incapacity planning. For example, I had a client today, right before I came to the show. She had done her estate planning 2 years ago. Husband has had at the time the beginning stages of Alzheimer's disease. Now is diagnosed for Alzheimer's. Is on the trail, is on the train towards needing care in the future. Just the classic presentation. And what she showed me was her estate plan. And it's not that exciting, but it's kind of super important that had him and her being in charge of the trust, and that if she died first, all of their assets would go to him. Kidding, right? And I pointed this out to her, and I said, "Do you think that's a good idea?" And she goes, "No." I'm like, "You're right." So the things like that, when you have a diagnosis, need to be done regardless, because you're on that train towards needing care in the future. And that's something where we don't want to wait. On the Medicaid, and kind of getting yourself ready for that situation, you know, if you're on the Alzheimer's train, use Alzheimer's because it's such a horrible issue, and it's really a good example of being, needing to take action. It's my recommendation you start dealing with it now, and because what part of now is not a good idea,
right?
As opposed to, waiting a month or 6 months or a year, and then having all that anxiety, and having, like this lady that I had right before we came down, if she got run over by the bus, everything goes into his name, and we'd be in a world of hurt. So anyways, taking action now is not a bad idea.
Okay. All right, I'm sure I'll have more questions in the future. I hope you're on again.
Oh, we are. I think once a month at least, right?
I think he's on the 15th of next month.
I might be doing that from Italy, so we'll see.
He's going to meet his new grandchild.
Mia Sophia. The new baby in the family.
In Italy.
Congratulations.
First one, so I'm still freaking out about it. Oh, my God, I'm a grandfather.
Yeah, I'm going to be a great-grandmother.
I know,
please.
I could not yet. I got a ways to go for that.
All right, Stephanie, I hope that answered your questions.
Yes, thank you kindly. I really appreciate
your help. Great questions.
Take care.
All right, have a great day. And now we need to hear from our wonderful partner, so don't go away. We'll be right back on Connecting Caregivers Radio.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Choosing the right chiropractor is an important choice to make. Located in Seminole, the Alexander Spine Center team is trained on the latest chiropractic treatments and technologies. At Alexander Spine Center, you'll find chiropractic and physical therapy care that is safe, effective, and a natural approach to pain and other health-related issues. Chiropractic unlocks your body's potential and natural healing process to ensure your life is a healthy life. We treat clients from the womb to the tomb. Call 727-397-3000 for a free consultation today, or visit our website at www.alexanderspinecenter.com.
They take good care of me twice a week. And did you know they got the Reader's Choice Award for 2019 for the best chiropractic in Pinellas County? So check them out.
Arden Courts is not just a place to live. It's a place to call home. Residential living combined with quality caregiving. This is the philosophy behind Arden Courts. Communities created exclusively for individuals with Alzheimer's disease and related dementia who would benefit from a safe and structured environment. For additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides, call 888-478-2410. to locate a community nearest you. Inquire about our educational seminars, resource library, or support groups, or simply feel free to ask questions you may have about Alzheimer's and related dementias. At Arden Courts, we know, we understand, and we can help because memory care is all we do. Remember, call 888-478-2410 for additional information about any of the unique services Arden Courts provides.
Guaranteed to make you laugh through your tears, Linda Burhan's book, Good Night and God Bless, is filled with humor and heartfelt inspiration to aid anyone facing the challenge of caring for a loved one at the end of life. Her story offers hope for human strength and understanding of weaknesses during a difficult time. Life doesn't normally prepare us to become a loved one's caregiver. When it happens, it's usually sudden. A diagnosis of an illness, age-related frailty, dementia, and life suddenly is anything but normal. And because we don't even know what we don't know, where do we turn to for help or guidance? In Connecting Caregivers, answers to the questions you didn't know you needed to ask, Linda offers information, education, and inspiration from her own experience and from experts whose advice, practical tools, and personal stories will empower and guide you. Make sure to add these inspiring books to your collection today, available on Amazon.com.
Introducing the life-changing Footbar Walker.
I'm Peggy from Danville, Kentucky, and I'm 91 years old. The Footbar Walker revolutionized my care of George. It absolutely benefits the patient and the caregiver both, and that's the beauty of it. It's so easy to use. It folds up just like a dream. I got it in and out of the car without any effort at all. The saving that I made from having to put him in a nursing home came to about $192,000.
Does someone you love use a walker? Do they struggle to get up from a seated position? Are you a caregiver dealing with physical pain and stress as you help your patient? The Footbar Walker was designed to assist not only the patient, but also the caregiver. Patients have more control standing up, and no lifting from the caregiver is required. See how it works at thefootbarwalker.com. That's thefootbarwalker.com. Peggy, would you recommend the Footbar Walker?
Do I ever? I would not be in the health that I'm in today at this age had it not been for the Footbar Walker.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Yes, that football walker is wonderful, and if you want to see a demonstration of it, they'll be part of the conference in May. I don't know if Peggy will be there,
yeah,
but
well, I only have one thing to say. Do I ever?
Do I ever? Yeah.
I do want to see that.
But I want to let you know about an event that's coming up on Friday the 17th in Tampa. Brita Miller is a friend of mine. She's from in Michigan. And she has a show called Miss Kelly's Journey Home. She's a caregiver advocate. She wrote a book, 52 Tips for Caregivers. She was on the show a while ago. But this story is about, based on her mother's life, Mrs. Kelly's journey home from Ireland to the United States, and a lot of things with aging. And it's absolutely fabulous. So it's going to be in Tampa at UCC. So I'm going to put all the information in the link of the show, or you can email me because I try to pull it up on my phone and I can't. Or you can email me at lindaburhans@aol.com and I'll give you all that information. I am going to be sure to be there. So thanks everybody for being here with us this week. I so appreciate you. I'm here for anything you need. If I don't have the answer, I know someone who does. Exactly, like Mr. Sean Scott.
Absolutely.
So take care of yourself. Remember, God loves you all the time, and have a delicious day.
Close your eyes.